The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
It's time for our Friday forum, and I'm delighted to welcome to the studio Louise O'Reilly. She's the Sinn Féin TD for Fingal, and she's also the party spokeswoman on workers' rights. Hugh O'Connell is the political correspondent with the Irish Independent and Sunday Independent, and indeed we're also joined by Senator Barry Ward. So we had lots of things coming up. It was a busy week, and we head into the silly season. We saw the government tighten immigration controls amidst a dire shortage of refugee accommodation, and Eamon Ryan, Charlie McConnellogue on at odds over climate targets. What will we start with? Let's start with immigration and the tightening of those rules amidst the dire shortage of accommodation. And we had the hoteliers on earlier. Louise O'Reilly, how do you think we're handling this in relation to, you know, at one hand, trying to do our best for these unfortunate people, but without really having the proper infrastructure to actually deliver?
There is a serious there's a serious issue with this, and it has arisen from a failure to plan. And I'm not going to do the Roy Keane quote because we all know what it is. The simple fact is we were in the grip of an accommodation crisis, a housing emergency. In fact, long ever before any refugees arrived from Ukraine, we of course have to ensure that we offer spaces to people coming from Ukraine. They're fleeing a war, you know, but we can't create a two-tier system of refugees. There can't be, you know, there can't be no acknowledgement of the fact that there are thousands of people who are stuck in direct provision, haven't had their applications approved, who can't move out because there's no suitable accommodation. We saw a foot dragging that I just cannot understand in relation to the Irish Council for Refugees, their proposal that the government would fast track the use of holiday homes. Now, nobody is suggesting for a minute that it's easy, but they have had months to do that and it hasn't been done. Now, I've been contacted by a number of people in my own area who have a holiday home, some of it over in the west of Ireland, some of it quite close to Dublin. And they're telling me that they have applied, they've gone into the process, but they, for months they hear nothing. Then they're trying to chase it up themselves. They're actively saying to the government and to IPAS, look, I have space here. Meanwhile, we have people sleeping on the floor in Dublin Airport. We have tents going up now. They're being told that they'll only be in the tents for a week. That remains to be seen. But certainly that's not going to take us into the winter. And in the winter, we're going to have the students looking for their accommodation back because they're going to be back in college. So there has been a failure to plan. And nobody is saying that the government could have predicted this latest influx. But the simple fact is, after 11 years of Fine Gael in government, they weren't dealing with the needs that existed already.
What do we need to do now, Barry Ward, in terms of where we go next? Like, we've hoteliers now who've committed for a period of time. They're all seem to be short-term contracts. They're making decisions, do I stay in the hotel business or is my new business looking after refugee guests? So there's an awful lot of stuff unhappening as we just go, like that isn't really planned for, as Louise just stated there.
Yeah, well, the first thing to say is that there is not a two-tier system. What you have is people coming into the country seeking refuge for different reasons. And so the Ukrainian refugees in particular, I think almost all of them want to return to Ukraine in the shortest possible time. And as they have to, because they're going to be required to rebuild their country when this conflict eventually ends. But speaking to Ukrainians here, they are all seeing this as a short-term solution and looking forward to returning home. It doesn't mean that the government hasn't achieved a great deal in relation to that. And I think the response to the crisis that has come unexpectedly since the 24th of February has been enormous. That's not just at the government level. In fact, at community levels, at all the people around the country have done enormous work to welcome Ukrainian people into this country. 40,000 of them, it has to be said. Yeah. And Louise is quite right to point out that there are areas of that system that haven't worked yet. But I think it's important to bear in mind that those 40,000 people, the vast, vast majority of them have been accommodated. And that in and of itself is an enormous achievement. The figures I've heard from last night are improving in the airport, from City West as well. I think they're improving, and those people are being moved into more long-term or medium-term accommodation. Okay. So there are achievements there as well. And Ukrainian people I speak to, and Ukrainian MPs who visited here last last month, and when I spoke to them in Ukraine itself, they are extraordinarily full of praise for what Ireland has done in terms of the swiftness with which it's moved compared to other European countries.
Okay, I'm going to move to another story now because I've got Hugh O'Connell, one of the authors of this story. It relates to Taoiseach Micheál Martin seeking a meeting with the AIB bosses after calling on the bank to reconsider making 70 branches cashless. Hugh, this is a pretty bizarre story in the sense that the government certainly got no heads up on it. They're a 70% shareholder in a business, be it a bank or otherwise, and they really have been caught flat-footed here. And if I was a 70% shareholder in a business and somebody went and made a key strategic decision without telling me, I'd be furious.
Yeah, I think the governments are, and I think Pascal Donoghue is as well, because they're, you know, as you said, the expectation is majority shareholder, although the state and the government doesn't have a sort of an operational role within AIB, that it would get a heads up on a significant decision here, which is going to affect an awful lot of people who ultimately their tax money was used to bail out AIB and to nationalise it, or to effectively nationalise it, or at least put the majority of it into state control. So I think that, you know, what you're seeing is a sort of a culmination of frustration at a government level with the way the banks have been acting over the last few years, the fact that some banks are pulling out of Ireland now, KBC and Ulster Bank, and just that lack of competitiveness within the market and the way they're treating customers. And this is a decision that has gone down extremely badly. And I think you see the Taoiseach reacting to that yesterday, saying that they need to reconsider. That is the sort of intervention, I think, by the government into the banking sector that I haven't really heard of in the last 10 to 15 years since the bailout.
The government will say that they don't have any operational involvement, but I can tell you this, as a 70% shareholder, you call the shots.
Absolutely. And I mean, the thing that's really striking me is that there's been a bit of a focus on the impact on older people. And I think some of it, I want to say, is verging on the disrespectful nearly, because people will be able to adapt. Absolutely. However, there are people who simply won't be able to travel and they want in branch services. So if you're talking to small to medium enterprises, and I have been over the last couple of days, and what they're saying effectively is this is just another cost that they're not going to be able to bear. So they have the, and you'll know this, Bobby, you're a businessman yourself, we have a situation now whereby people running small to medium enterprises, some of them cash only, some of them cash as a small or a large part of their business, and they do some contactless, etc. So at the end of the evening they have the choice, or the next morning they have the choice of either doing 100 kilometre round trip and the cost of that and the fact that they're going to be away from their business to get access to in branch services, or they keep the cash on their premises, which they don't want to do.
No.
If they keep it in their business, it's dangerous for their employees. If they keep it at home, it's dangerous for their families. They want rid of it. They want to put it into a bank. But now everybody is looking at the bottom line, and the cost of fuel has gone up to a level where people are actively thinking about the cost of a round trip. So this is really going to But people are asking the question rightly, as a nearly 70% shareholder, what are the government going to do? So the Taoiseach has said he's not happy, he's going to call them in. But we really need to see, you know, some tough talking from the government and some action. I mean, I know Pascal Donoghue has said he wasn't aware of it. I mean, that's fair enough if that's what he's saying. But was his department aware of it? Was somebody alerted to it? If his department were aware and didn't tell him, I think that is a very, very serious issue. But I find it hard to believe that nobody in the Department of Finance knew about this.
We'll get Barry's view in a second, but just there's some breaking news. I want to go to Frank Graney, our News Talk Courts correspondent. He's down. We're hearing now about the sentence handed down to Islamic State member Lisa Smith. Frank, you have some breaking news for us.
Yes, Bobby, good morning to you and your listeners. I've just stepped out of the Special Criminal Court where just a few minutes ago, Lisa Smith, a former member of the Irish Defence Forces, a 40-year-old mother of one, who travelled to Syria in 2015 to take up membership with a terror group, ISIS. She remained there for 4 years. She was found guilty before the non-jury special criminal court earlier this year of being a member of ISIS during that four-year period. She was back today for her sentencing. I think it was widely expected that a fully suspended sentence was going to be handed down today, certainly given the fact that her barrister, Michael O'Higgins, spent hours at her sentence hearing pleading for leniency, pleading for the 40-year-old mother of a 5-year-old daughter to be spared a custodial sentence. But I can tell you now that in the last few minutes, Lisa Smith went into custody. She has been handed a 15-month prison sentence for being a member of ISIS during that time. There was a real nervous energy around the courtroom this morning, Bobby. I really don't think Lisa Smith expected to be taken into custody today. She arrived in court a few minutes before her case was called. As far as I could see, she didn't have a backpack or any luggage with any belongings that maybe would have suggested that she was preparing to be in prison this evening. She has been on bail throughout. Throughout the proceedings, she was on bail. After she was convicted of ISIS membership, she was allowed to remain on bail. And again, after that lengthy sentence hearing last week, her bail terms remained. But I am reminded of something that the presiding judge, Mr. Justice Tony Hunt, said on that occasion. He did allow her to remain on bail, but he told her not to take any false comfort from that decision. Michael O'Higgins argued extensively for his client to remain on bail. One of the biggest arguments that he put forward is that she is a mother of a five-year-old daughter. Her husband, a Syrian man, died in Syria. So she has been taking care of their daughter ever since. There were a number of psychological reports prepared to the court yesterday. All of the experts who gave evidence described her as damaged, as a very vulnerable person, someone who was easily led, someone who was attracted to bad relationships. We heard about an abusive marriage, a violent relationship that she was in with a man she married in Syria. That was offered a mitigation. This was a man that was in control of her. She was frightened of him. She felt bullied, was regularly threatened and beaten by this man. She was treated like a servant, Mr. O'Higgins said at the sentence hearing. And he also asked the court on that occasion to consider the fact that Lisa Smith spent the guts of 2 years in appalling conditions in prison camps in Syria. She spent 2 weeks in a Turkish prison before she was back in Ireland. And she also spent a number of weeks in custody in Ireland after she was repatriated in December of 2019. So Mr. O'Higgins on that occasion asked the court to consider all of that and to look at the amount of time that she spent again in those prison camps and to maybe consider a non-custodial sentence in light of that. Mr. Justice Tony Hunt spent a few minutes outlining the reasoning behind his decision today. He told everyone gathered today, and it was a very busy courtroom, as you can imagine. He told everyone that there was an 8-year maximum available to the judges in this case. Given the fact that Lisa Smith did not plead guilty to this charge, as was her right, given the fact that she contested to it, obviously she wasn't entitled to a huge discount that she would have got if she pleaded guilty to the offence. She contested the charge. She was found guilty of it. They took all of the mitigating factors into account. Everything that Michael O'Higgins said, 2 weeks ago now, was taken into account when they constructed what they felt was an appropriate sentence. They did accept that she was of previous good character. They also referenced the 10 years that she spent in the Irish Defence Forces and said that she had made positive contributions to society through that military service. They referenced the hard time that she spent in Syria before she was repatriated. But interestingly, and I suppose this was the first indication that they were perhaps going to hand down a custodial sentence, because Mr. Justice Tony Hunt, in relation to that time she spent in the prison camps, he said that that was a foreseeable consequence for attracting herself and aligning herself to ISIS and for staying with that terror group during its collapse while it was in retreat. They mentioned the domestic violence that she suffered at the hands of her husband in Syria, the significant change in her personal circumstances since her return to Ireland. As I mentioned, she's a mother now. She's of good behaviour during her time in Ireland following her return. She has answered all of her bail conditions, very strict bail conditions too. There were some admissions in relation to some of the facts of this case that was taken into consideration. As she was acquitted of another charge, she was also accused of financing terrorism through an 800 euro wire transfer to an ISIS fighter. That was an attempted wire transfer. It was intercepted. She was acquitted of that charge. But on the membership charge, the judges did feel, after lengthy consideration, that the threshold for a custodial sentence had been passed, mainly to deter others who may be thinking about offering support to dangerous organizations abroad. She was handed a 15-month sentence. And Bobby, in the last few minutes, there was an application for her to remain on bail because she intends to appeal that sentence, but that was rejected. So she will be beginning that prison sentence today.
Okay. Thanks very much for that, Frank. Appreciate that. Breaking news there. 15 months, Louise. It's a tragic case, no matter what way you look at it. A vulnerable person.
It is, And I think that we should acknowledge the work of An Garda Síochána, because obviously they're operating internationally as well as within this jurisdiction, and the international cooperation that was there and the huge effort that went into this. But I suppose nobody wants to think about a man being separated from her child, particularly in a case where her dad is no longer here. But I mean, as I say, the Gardaí did absolutely Trojan work on this. I think stepping way outside of their normal operating role and you know, being able to have those kind of close international links that brought us to this.
Interesting to hear Frank say there. That there was some surprise around the custodial part of the sentence, because she certainly didn't expect. he indicated there that she was she wasn't ready to go to jail. His observations,
I think it is a surprise. It'll be a surprise to her, obviously, and to her legal counsel as well, given the strong argument that they made that she had been through enough at this stage, including as Frank mentioned there, the 2 years. You know, in various camps before she came back to Ireland. So, but, you know, I think Louise is right. You know, it was a very complex investigation by the guards, and they had, you know, secured an outcome of sorts. I know that she was she faced other charges which she was acquitted of. So, look, it's a sorry end to a very sorry story, really.
Barry, did you want to come in on it?
It's an area in which I practice, and I can certainly say that people would be warned of the possibility at the very least, but it's a very difficult situation for everyone involved. I can understand the court's desire to put down a marker in respect to this kind of behaviour. That's important too.
Yeah.
I wasn't in the court, so it's kind of difficult to assess exactly, but I mean, as Hugh said, it's a shock for anybody going into custody, and I'm sure, as we've heard, that it'll be appealed, so all of this will be brought out again and examined closely.
So, yeah, and we'll not over yet, maybe. Okay, well, we'll move on. Louise, it was the end of an era for cheaper mortgages. ECB raising the interest rates earlier in the week by more than was anticipated. I think I was looking at some figures, a 250,000 standard mortgage, an extra, it's going to cost you about an extra 60 or 70 euros a month. But bearing in mind also that the tracker people have immediately got the hit. They're the people who, I suppose, were somewhat insulated against this before. If there's talks of more rate increases coming, lots of people will be considering their options there now.
They will, and I was very struck by Katrina Redmond on RTE last night when she was talking about the impact. People will know her, she's a food blogger, but she's also someone who was caught up in the tracker mortgage scandal, and she was talking about the impact on her own bills, and she was saying very clearly that she's worried for the next winter on the basis that we are already in the middle of a cost of living crisis. People are just about managing to get to the end of the week. This additional rate increase, and I mean, obviously the ECB is independent, but this additional rate increase, if it is passed on, so that's the key here, doesn't have to be passed on. If it is passed on to customers, is going to represent a serious blow for people. And remember, there's an awful lot of people who aren't long out in negative equity, who were working hard and paying off a mortgage for a house that was, you know, worth less than they had paid for. That's absolutely soul destroying to have to do that. They're just out now.
Yeah, I know.
They've been hit with the cost of living crisis, and on top of that, now they're going to have a potential of further increases. And what I would be saying to the banks, and what I hope Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath are going to be saying to the banks and the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste, if that's what need be, is do not pass this rate increase on to your customers. Not at this stage. People cannot afford it. They're already stretched, and they're already stretched to the pin of their collar.
Last word to you, Hugh. On this,
yeah. Look, it's not ideal when consumers are facing already, you know, skyrocketing prices across the boards. And I think it's probably an indicator of things to come. I mean, I don't think the ECB is going to stop at what it did yesterday. There's already indications that into the autumn they'll be looking at it again. So
I just have some breaking news coming in.
Difficult winter
on the subject that we talked about earlier, which is the AIB. They're not proceeding now with the 7 day closure. So it must have been listening to us.
That's people power in action for you, Bobby.
But it is really important to see the government intervention there.
Yeah.
Pascal Donoghue and the Taoiseach have made their views very clear on this. So
never underestimate the power of the shareholder. That's the lesson
and
for me.
And the power
in this.
Of the people. I think they felt it. They would have been in receipt of a lot of emails and representations. You know, so that's a victory for people power as well.
Okay. Well, I want to thank our Friday Forum guests, Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Fingal, and spokeswoman on workers' rights, Hugh O'Connell, political correspondent with the Irish and indeed Sunday Independent, and Fine Gael Senator Barry Ward. Thanks all for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.